A special hello to each and every one of you. Hi, it's Monday, and it's time for Pop Off again. We'll be with you this whole hour. Got some great guests for you set up on Pop Off this whole week. It's all about you, how to feel better and how to do better, how to be more successful. I've gotten some really dynamic guests, including the ones that we have today, as a matter of fact. I love the name of this gal's book. The name of the book is called Bi-Coastal Babes, and it's neat because what it does is talk to you about travel tips. We all get on planes, and whether we're bi-coastal or not, like for those of you who may not know what bi-coastal means, that means people who travel for business reasons to both coasts. I mean, New York, Los Angeles back and forth, San Francisco, all over the place. Well, they have tips of the trade. They've kind of maneuvered into getting some of these things, so it makes life a little easier for them. And we're going to make life a little easier for you, even if you're not bi-coastal, but if you're going to take a trip, some hints and things so we look better and maybe travel a little easier. So she's going to have some tips for us. Also, you know, when the new millennium turned, and we came to the year 2000, and we thought, oh, my God, things are going to be wonderful. We're going to find, and I've talked to several very, very spiritual people, including Buddy Piper and a few others, and they all said, yes, there's going to be a fork in the road in the year 2000 when the millennium comes, and we have a choice to take the high road or the low road. And to be honest with you, I don't think we've taken the high road, but we're going to find out from Daniel Pinchbeck a little bit later whether there is a revision of spirituality in the 21st century and where we're going to go with it. We'll also talk about a Hollywood diet that has all the stars of Twitter, and this lady works with a lot of them. But before we do that, it's Monday, and on Monday we got to take a look at what's going to happen this week, especially if we want to solve some of our major problems. So, the weeks just melt away and the Mondays come again. But what do we do about it? It's time to check out the week to be. And it's always best to be prepared, and our psychic numerologist, Esther Baer, is well-equipped to set us on the right path because she has our numbers. Hello, Esther.
Hi, Mary Jane. How are you today?
I'm fine. How's it going for you?
Not too shabby. Not too shabby. I like the cool weather.
Well, you know, it's kind of cooling off. For you folks who are on the East Coast, we're on the West Coast, and man, have we been sweltering the last few days. And finally, it's starting to cool off a little bit. We're feeling a little bit better. However, Esther, it seems like today is a little squirrely. Are we coming up on maybe a full moon?
The full moon?
I think we're coming up on a full moon.
I think we've either just had it or we have it now, but I know it's close.
Okay, and, well, that must be squirrely because all day today, all kinds of weird stuff has been happening.
Now, oh, well, we are in a weird day today.
Be better.
We're in a weird day today, dear.
Is it really?
This is our accident-prone day, and it actually is a day that is ruled by the moon. So with the moon's going crazy, and everybody else will be also.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, so we have to go real slow today. And
oh,
this is a week that has to do with money and control and power. And when that goes on, the negative people get real, real crazy. That's where the road rage starts.
Uh-huh.
So today is one of those days. Wednesday's also another one of those days. And Sunday is one of those days.
Oy.
So those are 3 days that we really, really have to watch for this week.
Okay.
Because that moon influence stays with us. Even if it goes away, it's still there for a while.
It was just really weird because, like, all morning, I swear, I was on the phone for 2.5 hours. Everybody had a problem.
Oh, yeah. And they know who to talk to because you have a lot of answers.
Well, I had some, but some of them I'm going, duh. I wanted to say, go away and call me next week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, again, this is not a day that people have a lot of patience. So, and I tell people on these kind of days that one thing that frustrates them is stupid people. Or people that do not listen. And it's not that they're stupid. They don't pay attention. And so you try to tell them something, and it goes right over their head, or they're spacey, or they're not listening. And the more you have to explain, the less patience you're going to have.
Yeah, and
then you're going
like
to get
the
upset.
The more you explain, the less they hear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because people aren't paying attention today. That's why they're accident prone. They're out there running around, and their little radar is just, you know, turned off. And so they're just, and those kind of people, either cause accidents or in the middle of. So those are the ones you have to watch out for.
So stay away from them like the plague.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you can see them. And for those who use cell phones, I hope they know how to shut them off when they're driving, because I hate them people.
Yeah.
On days like this, they cannot do that.
Yeah, because that really makes you squirrely.
Oh, yeah. If you see people, and again, if you're tuned in, if you see people starting to ride that little white line or starting to sway or they're going too slow or too fast, just move over. Let them go by. I'm one of those that says I get there after the accident, not before or during.
Yeah.
So let them go start it, and I'll get there later, and I'll pass right by it.
Now, we know Monday, Wednesday, and Sunday are going to be weirdy, squirrely, be careful accident. Any good days?
Oh, yeah, the rest of the week is fine. I mean, tomorrow's a good Monday day for power. You know, if you're trying to hit the boss up for a raise, that's a good day to do it.
Okay.
Good business day. Thursday is a mentally creative day, so if you have to write reports or do something that's creative in your job and sales, wonderful day to do that or start something different that you haven't done yet. Friday is a good intuitive day, and so is Saturday. Those are great days if you want to go play and gamble, if it feels good. Of course, Saturdays are lotto days, so that's a good day, and it's a lucky day. And so, you know, play what feels good. Logic is not going to be working on those days.
Will colors help at all?
Oh, sure. This whole month we're in pinks and blues, and our lucky days, our intuitive days, are real light pastels on Friday. Purple is wonderful on Saturday. Helps you stay in tune more. It gets you in tune with your psychic abilities.
Now, when you say these colors, you say all shades of, too, right?
Yeah, like purples is like from light lavenders all the way down to great purple.
Oh, okay, good.
And you can even throw in some mauves if you like to mix your colors.
Fantastic. So just be a little wary today, Wednesday,
and
Sunday.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Today and Wednesday are probably our two worst days. Sunday, kind of stay close to home. You want to watch mechanical problems.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, if anybody wants to get a hold of you to do a personal reading and really find out what their numbers are all about, how do they get hold of you?
They can call me at 916-427-8727.
And let's repeat that.
916-427-8727.
Fantastic. And you stay well this week, too, okay?
Oh, I go slow. I watch my numbers every day.
Well, I think I better start looking at mine, because I think mine are getting out of whack.
Oh, we'll talk to you about them later. Not to worry.
Have a wonderful day, Esther.
You too, sweetie.
Take care.
Now. Bye-bye now.
She's such a neat lady. She really, really is. She's always got her act together. She always wants to help everybody out, and Lord knows we all need it. Talk about needing something. How many of you have wondered about diet? You know, we all try diets. We're always ready to try a new diet. But you wonder, like, how many more am I going to try? I've said this on the air before, and I'll say it again. Where are we going? All diets seem to work. You're going to take weight off no matter what. You're going to take some weight off. The question is, are you going to keep it off? I've talked to so many people who have been on diets, and they not only gain the weight back, but they gain even more than they did before. Well, hopefully we can maybe answer some of your questions today from a lady who is in the know. She's like with the Hollywood elite. Now, you know, if anybody is going to try a new diet or try something that's completely different, it's going to be those folks in La La Land, because when they go to the Oscars and the Emmys, they always want to look absolutely primo. So we're going to be talking a little bit about a new kind of diet. It's The Diet. Now, this is a novel that she wrote, so it's not like one of those dry diet books that you have to read. And maybe we don't have to give up our pizza, pasta, bread, and other goodies, but we'll just have to find out.
On a dusty Bel Air day, in the summer of 62, Big Squaw Baggy Chin did a foul deed she'd lived to rue. From her carousel of birth control, one tiny pill forgot. And on that dusty Bel Air day, a makeover tummy tuck from
tummy tuck
was begun. 9 months later, I knew it well. In the famous plastic surgery hotel, was born a princess with fat boobs off. She had a life full of description worth the love. So she earned the name of Princess Tummy Tuck. Princess Tummy Tuck. Your cane makes over Tummy Tuck princess.
We hear about those tummy tucks and everything else, and we'll tell you. You know, but Hollywood is all a Twitter. Gee, I'm telling you, there is a fat-stopping carb. Wait till you hear about it. It's a carb secret, a secret of the Hollywood elite that is about to be released. Now, counting carbs has become an obsession, and I really do mean an obsession. Yet they still love. You can't give up all that stuff, like pizza and pasta and bread and other goodies, maybe even a Krispy Kreme once in a while. Well, we're going to look to Editha Kay, who has shown more than 600 of Hollywood's most influential women how to end the struggle once and for all. And she really has worked with them for a long time, and she knows exactly what to look for in a person's life to make a major difference. Now, in her latest book, it's called The Diet, she says she has the key to unlock that fat door. Now, Kay was also a producer of her very own national PBS series. It was called The Fountain of Youth. And I have to, kind of check with Editha to find out if she really means that we can do this without having to really give up the rest of our lives. And I really do mean that seriously when we talk about a diet. I think it's almost like we do. We're going to give away everything. Can we really survive? Can we really make it? Well, Editha says we can, and we're going to have to check in with her. Don't forget, a little bit later on, we are going to have Cynthia Langston, our bi-coastal babe, and she will also give us some ideas, some major ideas, on how we can do some traveling. And all of you are probably out and about, maybe doing your vacation thing this year, and you usually only have like a week or two, and man, it can get pretty crazy. So we're going to find out about that. I have to check with Don. Don, is Editha online with us yet? No, I guess she's not. Oh, he says yes, she is. Hello, Editha.
Mary Jane.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I am so fine, but I'll tell you, boy, I think I've talked about every possible diet on this show over the years. And I've gotten to a point where I honestly believe that all diets work and no diets work. All diets work, you'll lose weight, but the diets don't work because you probably gain it back and maybe a few more pounds.
Well, this isn't your typical diet book.
Good.
This is a novel.
Yes.
And it's called The Diet. And it has a real diet inside of it, but it's the story of a woman. Her name is Kate. And she's a celebrity chef, and she owes everything in the world to food, everything. Food has given her every single blessing. And then one day, the food that has blessed her turns on her. And through a series of events in her life, she her emotional triggers engage, and she starts to eat. And she eats and eats, and she gains and gains, and she loses everything. She loses her shape. She loses her family. She loses her career. The only thing she can't lose is her fat. And so one night, now we should really have one of those thunder claps everything. She really decides she's going to just eat herself to death. That's it. She's ordered 3 huge pizzas, and it's over for her.
Uh-oh.
Except that she gets a revelation that night. And that revelation inspires her to come up with what is actually the diet for which the book is named. And she basically starts to cook herself back and eat herself back into the slender, perfect life.
Well,
and as
I'm
a result, she gets
what that slender, perfect life is.
Well, she's looking for the one thing, that all many women are looking for. She's looking for the perfect man and the perfect diet. And guess what? She finds both of them.
Well, this is a good thing. That's fine. Which did she find first?
Well, she finds, actually, the perfect man helps her find the perfect diet. So there's a real synergy there. But the one thing that the book is very different about, first of all, it's got a ton of fabulous, lots of food in there. So
yeah,
you can really enjoy
it. You know what my favorite was?
I beg your pardon?
The breakfast brownies. I like those.
Breakfast brownies is a breakfast banana split that is amazing to eat. And it's a fun story. It's a great little read. And the diet itself is based on a real diet. It is eating, there is a carb that has no calories in it.
No, come on now.
Yeah, there is. Actually, there is. And
which
this
one?
Is, I mean, you can, no, there is. I'm not just making this up. And you know what it's called? What
no.
We know it as? We know it as good old-fashioned fiber. Fiber is
again?
A carb.
Say that again.
Fiber.
Fiber. Oh, okay.
What my grandmother used to call roughage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is a carb, and it has no calories of its own.
Yeah, but I can't eat all fiber. I'll be in the bathroom.
No, but here's what happens, and this is what Kate discovers. When you add fiber, or this carb with no calories, to other foods, it takes up space that high calories take up. So you can eat, you fill yourself up, and you're not getting as many calories, okay? Which is why when you make oatmeal cookies and throw in an extra handful of oatmeal, you have reduced the amount of calories in that cookie.
No kidding.
Yeah. So Kate comes up with this idea. And then the other thing that she discovers, of course, is the standby that we've known for like 50 years is protein. And the diet is really inspired. A little prayer falls out of an old cookbook that her mother left Kate. And it's a little prayer about the loaves and the fishes. And that's really what inspires the diet. The loaves standing for the carbs and the fish standing for protein. Carbs and proteins together, perfect. So she creates this whole AM/PM thing. She cooks and everything else. So, and it's fun. I mean, the book is already hitting the bestseller list on Amazon. It's a great read. And it's just, you know, if you're tired of the same old diet books that, you know, work for 10 minutes and then don't, what happens to Kate at the end of this book, which is what I wanted to show, is this, the character, like all of us, begins to have a love affair again with food. She begins to love food again. And isn't that a good thing?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I can't.
Yeah,
there's so many women, you know, we sit down to dinner or something, to a meal, and we feel guilty about it. Well, wouldn't it be nice to eat with no guilt?
Yeah, you know, we do. We worry about everything.
Right. I mean, you know, always, like, how many laps do I have to do because I've just eaten this? Or, you know, it's ridiculous. But the most important thing is a very inspirational book, because the most important thing that Kate discovers at the end of this book is that she really begins to love herself.
You know, I think that's
herself.
Where we've made a mistake, especially in this country. We don't love ourselves unless we're the perfect person. And you
right.
know what? That person doesn't exist.
Right. And so she does. She has this wonderful, you know, she begins to love natural food. She, you know, real food. She grows a garden. She begins to love herself and trust herself. So it's got a wonderful ending. It's a great beach read, actually, if you're getting ready for the beach. And it's fun. And if you, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you go to my, I have a sort of a temporary website up while
oh, good,
the real one
ahead.
Is getting done. It's called freedietbooks.com. And if you go to the site, there are two free books that I offer if you buy the diet. And one is the Diet Diary, which is 365 days of tips, hints, notes that you can make to yourself and everything. And the other is the free book that has all the recipes that are actually in the novel, The Diet.
Cool.
And The Diet is just doing awesome on Amazon, so you have a good time.
So, in other words, what you're saying is if we add fiber to what we eat, and it can be in any other form, have you seen the stuff that says like a liquid thing that you can just put into your
No,
food?
No. You just add, oh, yeah, I've seen, there's all kinds of fiber. But, you know, honestly, if you add, if you add half a cup of applesauce to a recipe, apples have a lot of fiber. If you eat an orange for breakfast instead of drinking orange juice, you've just added a lot of fiber. What's that white stuff that holds the juice inside the orange?
And
that's
fiber. That's the calories?
Celery is good, but, you know, fruits, vegetables, I mean, real natural foods have a lot of fiber in them.
And that cuts the calories.
I beg your pardon?
That cuts down the calories.
Yes, because fiber fills food up. The more fiber you can sneak into your food, the less room there is in the food for those foods, for those elements that are, for carbs that have high calories.
Amazing.
For example, here's an idea.
Well, it sounds
the next
like fun.
Recipe that you yeah the next recipe that calls for a cup of sugar or something, put in half a cup of sugar and half a cup of applesauce. Guess what you've just done? You've reduced
well,
the amount of calories in that cookie.
Anita, you're making it way too simple.
Pardon?
You're making it way too simple.
Well, it should be simple, shouldn't it? I mean, it shouldn't be complicated. And that's why I think natural foods are there in the first place.
I think you're right. Now, the book is available, though, at all the bookstores, too,
yes,
right?
It's available all over the country. And, you know, I always wanted to say this, wherever books are sold. It has a very tempting cover on it, but it's available at Amazon if you want to buy it online. And if you just go to my site, freediabooks.com, and, you know, you can download the other two free books, The Diet Diary and The Diet Cookbook.
Fantastic. Editha, you make it an easy read, and that makes it even better. I thank you so much for being with us on Pop
Off. Thank you very much for your time and your enthusiasm, and God bless.
You too. Take good care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Again, it's called The Diet, and I love the concept, just adding fiber. Besides, that's healthy for you. She's not basically saying to eat pills or all this other garbage that people are always asking for. Fiber is actually very, very good. We don't get enough fiber in our diet, so adding the fiber in the diet also cuts the calories. Can you believe it? That seems absolutely amazing. Let me give you that website again. It's 3dietbooks.com. I'll put all this up on my website, popoff.com, too, with the name of the book, so you can always look that up under popoff.com. Always have the guest at the end of the week. At 3dietbooks.com, you get two free ones if you buy the diet. That's a pretty good deal. Always new and exciting and pop-off, that's what we try to do. And talking about new and exciting, coming up we're going to talk about spirituality in the 21st century. Are we there? Are we going to get there? Is there anything we can do to make the changes and start something happening in our lives? You'll begin to wonder after the year 2000. I'm not sure that we were really headed in the right direction. Are we now? We will find out on Pop-Off.
Laura, can you be a little quiet? Laura, can you be quieter, please? Laura, I'm sorry, I'm about to be a... Maybe on the radio.
Will there be a return of the real spirituality in the 21st century? Well, we're going to find out. It doesn't seem like we've headed in that right direction, but, you know, maybe we'll get off to a great start and get away from all this war and hurricanes and tsunamis and lack of belief. And Daniel Pinchek says, don't worry, it's on its way. The return of the, I hope I pronounce this right, Quetzalcoatl, and if it isn't, he'll tell me how. He tells it like it will be in his book, 2012. Daniel, nice to have you with us on Pop-Off.
Hey, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, am I pronouncing that right? Is it Quetzalcoatl?
I think it's Quetzalcoatl. I don't think you pronounced the last L.
Quetzalcoatl, okay. Now, what the heck is Quetzalcoatl?
So Quetzalcoatl is the plumed serpent or feathered serpent of Mesoamerican mythology. And what I argue in the book is it's a kind of archetypal god form kind of like the Buddha of compassion in the Tibetan tradition. And what it represents is the integration of spirit and matter. The bird is heaven or air or spirit, and the snake is earth or matter. So it's the integration of heaven and earth or spirit and matter. And I see that as very much part of this whole 2012 transition, mm-hmm. as a kind of integration of esoteric and shamanic kind of mystical ways of being and knowing with more like the modern empirical, rational, scientific knowledge system.
You know, I do have to talk with you, though, because when we turn the millennium, the 2000, everyone was saying, hey, we're going to have a fork in the road. There's going to be a high road and a low road, and so we're going to take the high road. And, man, I think we got somewhere we fell off the high road onto the low road because it has not been a positive journey.
Well, I think it's more complex to say, but I see a lot of things getting better. You know, I think things are getting better and worse simultaneously. And in the book and in my work, I've really been trying to think through what's going on very, very carefully. You know, I think that this is a very powerful and transformative period that we're in. There's a number of levels in which I look at it. I mean, I think that we could look at the things that are happening on the planet, like the wars and ecological disasters and so on, are kind of showing us aspects of the human psyche, the kind of shadow side of the psyche. And it's really forcing us to do this deeper work on a personal and collective level to reintegrate those shadow projections and do our own work.
Now, you do refer to the Mayan prophecy, and does that have to do with what you're talking about, a global shift in human consciousness in the year 2012?
Well, I think that the shift is already happening. And the book is called 2012 because that was the end date of the Mayan calendar, and there was a big astronomical alignment that happens then that they seem to be focused on. And that they were measuring these huge cycles. They may have had a whole different model of time, really understanding how time is related to consciousness and synchronicity and how that's all interwoven with the movements of the planets and the sun's relationship to the galactic center. But I don't really focus on, despite the name of the book, I don't focus on the 2012 end date. I think this transformational process is going on right now. And, you know, one aspect that really interests me is a kind of psychic aspect. It seems that a lot of the people that I know, and myself included, have been experiencing an upsurge of synchronicities, telepathic events, dream foretellings that come true.
Like,
so it's
what?
Almost like this whole dimension of the psyche is becoming more tangible and more available to us.
Like what, Daniel?
What's that?
Like what?
Well, I mean, in both books, in 2012, Breaking Open the Head, I talk about, you know, many, many synchronicities and kind of correspondences that have happened to me and that just increasingly take place. That's really up to the individual to find out if that corresponds to their own reality. And I think there are people who have not beamed into it at all. It could be anything from, like, I was looking for a book all over California, this kind of obscure book. As soon as I returned to New York, I went to the park, and a friend of mine was reading the book and gave it to me. Just a huge host of kind of synchronistic things that happen to us that, according to the kind of modern rational view of reality, would only be coincidences or luck. But then I think you could almost see that there's this other kind of level of the psyche or of consciousness, which is kind of self-organizing.
You know, I love all the idea of consciousness and understanding and mind expansion, et cetera. But you know what? I can't get my hands around it. I can't get my logic around it. It just seems to be flying a little bit here, flying a little bit there. It's almost like the 60s, but they did it with drugs. You know, where are we? I mean, what does this mean to all of us?
Right. Well, that's why, I mean, it's a long book, and I tried to go after this whole concept in a very foundational way and really build a bridge between our kind of rational and logical, you know, minds and this more kind of intuitive and esoteric dimension. And I think it's a work on an individual level. I mean, you have to do it intellectually, and you have to do it from your own kind of subjective window on reality and see if this corresponds to what your world is. For instance, Carl Jung, who wrote about synchronicities, and he was obsessed with this idea of the reality of the psyche, and that we tend to think of as mind as being an epiphenomenon of matter, but it could be totally different. I mean, quantum physics has indicated to us that it might be that consciousness is much more integrated with the physical realm, and that actually it's not two separate processes at all. It's one non-dual process where consciousness is the foundational aspect of reality.
You know what? I love what you're saying. It sounds so beautiful, but it makes no sense to me as a human being. I mean, you know, as a common person out here, you're talking about all these ethereal things.
I'm not talking about things that are ethereal at all. That once you understand them, they're very, very visceral and very sensible. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, if you think about the 1750s before the Industrial Revolution, you know, if you told people that electricity was going to be able to create huge cities and, you know, jet planes and all this stuff, they would have looked at you like you were mad. But once they'd understood what lightning was and how to take that energy and make it into something that could transform the world, it became totally tangible and visceral. And I think we might be in the same state with kind of what people have been calling psychic phenomena, that it could actually become something transformative for the planet and for humanity.
But that still doesn't tell me what is going to happen and what I'm supposed to do about it.
Well, I mean, I look at it from all different levels, you know, and I think we're being really, really challenged right now to get beyond our kind of egocentric way of life, where we feel that, like, our ambitions and our goals are paramount, because, you know, really, in certain respects, the planet may be in the process of kind of rejecting the kind of civilization that we've been putting forth in terms of climate change, species extinction. You know, within 30 years, 25% of all species are going to be extinct. In terms of all the wars, depleted uranium used in the Iraq conflict, you know, so somehow the civilization we've created is out of alignment with the planet, and we're going to have to go and do a lot of work, both as individuals and communities, to shift into a different form of being. And to a certain extent, we may have to look more at what indigenous cultures had in terms of their relationship to the planetary ecology. And so you know, my book tries to look at that and think about the kind of changes that we will have to make.
Okay, well, just, you know, since we only have maybe about 6 or 7 minutes left here, give me some tips. How do we get started? Where do we go to? What do we look to? Obviously, after we read your book, we got to do something.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, I try not to be proscriptive, because I don't think that's an effective means. I think that when anybody makes this shift in terms of their own internal psyche, instead of thinking about, like, just what can I get for myself and my family, to thinking about themselves as kind of a sentient aspect of this planetary ecology that's transforming so rapidly, then they can look at their own skill set and their own capacities and see where that best fits in. I mean, from my view, having written the book and having thought about this stuff for 5 years, I'm working on creating a new media and membership organization called Evolver. And the purpose of Evolver will be to give people new tools, whether it's alternative energy, permaculture, mushroom cultivation, like really, you know, practical ways, and also kind of an infrastructure for making connections and communities.
Did you say mushroom cultivation?
There's this guy Paul Stamets who's done a lot of work with gourmet mushrooms and also using different types of mushrooms for bioremediation, so like with toxic chemicals and toxic spills and landfills.
You're not talking about mind expansion.
No, I'm talking about you know, all sorts of different mushrooms that actually have a lot of benefit for the planet. But I mean, he does think about fungus and mycelial as almost sort of mycelial networks as being very similar to kind of synaptic networks. There's a kind of like fungal consciousness on various levels. He's a very interesting thinker. But that's only just one piece. I mean, so for me, there's like a whole range of ideas and businesses and ecological entrepreneurship that most people don't even know about. So how can we coordinate all that information and get it to people so they have a whole different range of options and how they spend their money?
Hmm. Now, you actually investigated the crop circles in England.
Mm-hmm.
What did you discover?
Well, I mean, basically, I think that the idea that they're simply a human-made hoax becomes untenable when you really sit with them and explore them. There's just a lot of levels to them. There's also scientists who've done studies on what happens to the plants in the formations, that the molecular structure of the plants has shifted, and they published this result in peer-reviewed science journals. There's kind of extraordinary geometrical complexity and new Euclidean paradigms and simple patterns. But at the same time, there are people who claim to make them, and it's very hard to find for a certainty, you know, one or the other kind of answer. So I mean, I sat with this for like a couple of years and spent summers in England going to all these formations and talking to everybody involved. And what I ended up thinking is that somehow the whole phenomenon of the crop circles, which I really recommend people go to cropcircleconnector.com or temporarytemple.co.uk to look at the images so they can see how complex they've become. But anyway, the whole phenomenon in totality is a kind of teaching, and it seems to be like a teaching on the nature of reality and on the nature of consciousness and on all these other areas I'm trying to bring into focus in this book that really somehow, like, where your consciousness is at, it kind of defines your possibilities. It seems to be part of what's embedded in this phenomenon of the crop circles.
Now, do you believe in extraterrestrials?
Well, I don't believe in anything. I mean, I try to maintain an open attitude of curiosity and skepticism. But I don't have a problem with conceiving of the possibility that there are other levels of galactic intelligence and galactic beings who may be communicating with us in many ways. I mean, one of the ideas about psilocybin, that you know, which are the magic mushrooms that Terence McKenna developed, was that they might actually themselves be extraterrestrials. They might be like a kind of galactic mushroom consciousness that disseminates itself on spores around the universe, traveling on asteroids. So it may be that what's extraterrestrial may reveal itself to us in ways that are, you know, much simpler and yet more profound than our kind of like normal science fiction conceptions.
Yeah, I mean, do we even have the possibility of parallel universes? I mean, there's a lot of theories.
Yeah, I think that we're going to be exploring kind of all these different paradoxes, and you know, that's for me is part of, I mean, I don't call it the mind expansion, I call it more like the intensification of consciousness and awareness, opening into these different possibilities that, you know, may be part of our future as a human species to explore.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I think you're right. I mean, we have to all explore within ourselves exactly what we feel is out there and what makes us tick so that we can tick with the rest of the world. But, you know, we can't go sit on a mushroom someplace and contemplate our navel. We have to do something to make, you know, make things change.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, that's why, I mean, that's really like the front and center for me is how to, you know, put ideas into practice and how to help this transformational process. I mean, and as we've seen with the flood in New Orleans, you know, there are kind of old structures of support structures that may not be able to count on if there are crises, if peak oil happens, or if there are more climate change disasters, as the, you know, the Al Gore film Inconvenient Truth reveals. So we're actually going to need to evolve kind of new support structures to change what's going on.
And let's be honest about it. Daniel, transition is tricky. Wouldn't you say that? Transition is very tricky.
Wait, can you say that again? I could barely hear you.
I'm sorry. Transition, any kind of transition or change is tricky.
Yeah, exactly. But it could also happen much more seamlessly than we imagine. I mean, before the Berlin Wall fell, nobody even had a clue that, you know, the whole Soviet Union could just kind of dissolve, you know. I think who knows how there's, you know, we can see that there's going to have to be some kind of transition, and we don't know how that's going to play out. But I think that, you know, as I said, if sort of consciousness is more involved in our reality and we're kind of co-creating reality through our activity of intention, you know, then we should try to intend the best possible outcome rather than some just disastrous or cataclysmic one.
Now, do you have a website?
I have a website, breakingopenthehead.com was the website for my last book, and there's a discussion forum there where we talk about a lot of these different ideas.
Again, that's breakingopenthehead.com?
Yeah. And then there's also Evolver has a website, which is still under construction, which is just evolverproject.net.
Super. I assume that the book 2012 is available at all the bookstores, Amazon, all that?
Yeah, it's out everywhere, and I'm very pleased with the response I'm getting to it. I mean, the mainstream media is, I think, finding it a little indigestible, but I'm getting a lot of positive response from readers who are connecting with these ideas. I'm really giving them a whole different set of concepts for thinking about what's happening on the planet now, and I think people are really, really responding to that.
Well, you know, it's like I said, people need to get their head around it. You know what I mean? You got to get a concept, something to hold on to, because sometimes it flies around out here, and you go, I can't grab it. I don't know how to grab it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's work. I mean, it takes a lot of discrimination, and I think that's what we're really being called upon to do. You know, to do this work so that we can reach like a different kind of understanding and incorporate this kind of psychic or shamanic understanding of reality with our kind of empirical scientific consciousness. I don't think they're working against each other. I think they support each other. And that's been a strain, I mean, since the 1970s with the Tao of physics, and recognizing that quantum physics and Eastern mysticism and shamanism really kind of support each other as a new paradigm or new worldview. So it's almost like it's taken a long time for us to be able to step into that worldview. It's just so different than the Newtonian Cartesian one that we inherited.
keep doing the research for us, and we'll keep trying to put our head around so we can figure out what we're going on so we can survive.
Yeah, well, I think we can do better than survive. I think we could really thrive, you know, and there's a lot of really interesting ecological thinking about how, you know, you could redesign the industrial economy so that everything was positive and made positive kind of feedback loops in terms of helping biological systems. We just have a lot of old thinking from the 19th century and the Industrial Revolution that we need to sort of take apart, and then we can go forward again.
Fantastic. Daniel, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And I appreciate it. We'll have you back.
Okay, cool.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye. That's Daniel Pinchot, and the name of the book is 2012, Return of the Quetzalcoatl, I think is the way he pronounced it, and it's kind of like a supreme type being. But, you know, these are things that are sometimes hard to get our minds, it really is to get the mind around and logic around, because we live in a logical world. We live in an everyday world that says, okay, either we do it this way, this way, or this way, or it's not done right. And when you have to try and think something on a much more spiritual plane, it gets very confusing. Now, before we talk to our bi-coastal babe, again, that website is Breaking Open the Head. That was his last book, breakingopenthehead.com. And again, the name of the book is 2012, and available at all the bookstores. I guess it's coming. Hopefully you heard it first on Pop Off, and it gets you to think a little bit more about it. Speaking about thinking about travel, you know, it's summertime. Everybody's doing their vacations, whether it's a short one or a couple of weeks. We get ready to go, and then we have to go on that trip and go, I don't know, how do I pack? What do I take? What are some tips to help me survive? If you have to do a lot of traveling as a potential salesperson or a person who has a business that you got to go to different cities all the time, how do you do it? Well, that's coming up on Pop-Off, and hopefully we can give you some practical tips that won't cost you a lot, but it'll make a lot of difference in your life. Well, hopefully it's the way we're going to like it. If you're a bi-coastal babe, that is, you know, you'd be surprised how many travel between Los Angeles and New York, or not even necessarily bi-coastal, but they do a lot of traveling. It could be for their business. It could be some pleasure. We're doing a lot of that during the summertime. Everybody gets crazy, and they got to do their week or 2 weeks, and they got to get it all in. Well, we've got to have some good tips to go along with it. Well, Cynthia Langston knows. She's one of those bi-coastal babes, as a matter of fact. And her book called Bi-Coastal Babe explores the hectic world that she lives in. It's a novel, but it could happen. Hi, nice to have you with us, Cynthia.
Hi there, thank you.
How's it going?
It's going great.
How long have you been a bi-coastal babe?
Oh, I started my research market research business about 7 years ago, and my day job is to research market trends in the cosmetics industry. So what we do is go to different cities across the country, and we do our focus groups. We research the market trends, and then I report back to my clients, which are in New York. So I'm going back and forth between New York and Los Angeles, where I live, and all different cities all across the country constantly.
Wow, you are on the go. Now, since you're on the plane a lot, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I have to make a plane trip, especially if it has to be like a 6 or 7 hours on a plane, I hate it. I dread it. It's dry. It's, you know, all that stinky air that I have to have recirculated, I got to breathe in. And by the time you get there, you're all haggard looking. Got some tips for us if we're doing some plane trips this summer?
Oh, I certainly do. And it's true. Women travelers are horrified when they find out just how much their looks can be affected by everything that you said. Also changes in the environment, different climates, different time zones. The dry airplane air is one of the biggest. The biggest beauty killer is dehydration that comes from travel. And it causes all of those things you talked about, dry skin, a dull complexion, brittle hair, bloating. So staying beautiful on the road really requires that we give ourselves a lot of extra TLC. And I think it starts the night before. It's a good idea to exfoliate your face and body, maybe put on a little thin layer of self-tanner before you go to sleep. That way, when you get up in the morning, you're about to get on the plane, you're going to be revived already, your skin's going to be in good condition going into it, and then, you know, once you get there, you're not going to be quite as drained and dull in terms of your complexion on the plane. It's really important to keep drinking a lot of water, at least 8 ounces for every hour that you're in the air. And I also like to take like a heavy moisturizer with me. Prescriptives has an in-flight moisturizer. I like to put it on every single hour that I'm on the plane, and then once when I get off the plane, because you have no idea how much moisture and how much hydration is just sucked out of your skin from that airplane air.
And we're not talking about a martini or a cup of coffee. You're talking about real water.
Yeah, real water, no substitutes. I would say stay away at all costs from everything they serve on the airplane except for water. Their food is so salty, and carbonated beverages are bad for bloating, they're bad for dehydration. Coffee, anything caffeinated, just stay away and stick to the water.
Those are good, you know, that's a good idea just every day, too, but especially on the plane. I just, every time when I get to the other place, even though if I drink a lot of water, you got to be careful. I even got myself, there's one of these little things that supposedly you wear around your neck, and it kind of recirculates so that the air that you're breathing in is kind of purified before you breathe it.
I've never heard of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. You can get it where they have kind of unusual homeopathic things or homeopathic things. You'll find it. But it was just amazing because I kind of felt a little better. It kind of purified the air before I took it in.
Oh, gosh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to add that to my list of recommendations.
You're on the plane a lot, so you need this. Now, what about just, you know, the comfort zone, packing? Good heavens, you're on the plane all the time. You're traveling all the time. How do you even pack for something like that?
Well, you know, my theory is that staying gorgeous on the road is a lot of work, but it also should feel fun and special. Department stores, beauty stores like Sephora, even drug stores now are filled with innovative products that are tailored for travel. These products come in portable sizes, and a lot of these companies are even making special travel kits, which I think, you know, it may cost a little bit more, but these products are worth every penny. Usually when we take trips, we find ourselves cramming our oversized bottles into baggies so they don't spill all over our suitcases. You know, we get to the destination, it's the same old stuff. I think, you know, if you're going to be a frequent traveler, it's worth it to go out there, check out some of these cool, fun, innovative products, and build yourself a travel cosmetics kit that you're going to take with you every time that feels, you know, a little fun and special and kind of adds a little something to that, you know, stressful on-the-road experience.
Now, I would also imagine, and this was told to me a long time ago, and it took me a while to kind of get it through my head that I need to do this. You should always travel with at least one change of clothes and some night clothes on the plane because your clothes may not get there with you.
I cannot tell you how many times in the last year and a half that my suitcase has been lost. I think it's three or four times there's so many travel delays, plane, you know, flight cancellations, flight delays now. I remember getting to, I think it was Atlanta at 1:30 in the morning. I had an early morning meeting the next day, and the suitcase was gone. I mean, I stood there in tears, and I didn't know what to do. It's very important to have something on you that can at least get you by in the event of an emergency like that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of fabric clothes now that you can carry that don't wrinkle and all that. You should have it at least as a backup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you get a little outside of shirt and a skirt, you know, you could wrinkle free, you roll it up nice, shove it in your carry-on, you're ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people do understand if you get to a meeting and that, and you're not exactly in the suit, at least you have a nice presence. That's the main thing.
Oh, exactly. And it's not hard to do. I mean, especially because some of these travel cosmetics, because they come in such portable sizes, you can bring them right with you on your carry-on, and you can be almost, you know, ready to go without even having your suitcase.
Now, why did you decide to write this as a novel?
Well, you know, going back and forth, especially between New York and Los Angeles, it really struck me how different the two coasts are, just in terms of everything, the culture, the people, the lay of the land, and especially how I actually started to feel like a different person depending on which city I was in. So I thought it would be interesting to write a story about a girl whose job it is to go back and forth between New York and L.A. and really capture that contrast between the two cities in her own life. So in her struggle to juggle the two cities and the two different boyfriends that she makes in each city,
uh-oh,
she kind of comes to understand who she is as a person and which type of energy she needs to make herself happy.
Uh-huh.
So it was really that huge cultural contrast between New York and Los Angeles that I think so many people find so exciting, but maybe not relatable. So my character is a girl from a small town who's thrust into this glamorous world of the big cities, and also has this fabulous job as a trend tracker, which we can talk about too. But so she's sort of a fish out of water and finding her own way, which is, I think, something we can all relate to.
Well, you know, I love the idea, because if you think about East Coast and West Coast, we're talking about 180 degrees here.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to someone who is a stylist and a fashion person, and she said, you go to New York, and it's you know, the darker colors, the blacks, the grays, the browns. You know. Then you go to Los Angeles, and it's the reds and the oranges and the golds. You know?
Yep. You know, what's funny about the character is when she hits New York, she meets a guy who is very, he's very representative of the city. He's slick. He works on Wall Street. He's sort of that street smart personality, and she's really drawn to him. But then when she goes to L.A., and she goes back and forth every week, when she goes to L.A., she finds herself attracted to the complete polar opposite, which is this laid-back surfer dude. And
you
she's going back and forth, and she's finding that she just loves both of these experiences so much that she sort of, you know, wonders, where do I fit in the middle of all this?
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know what makes me crazy? You go to New York, and if you have a schedule, you have to be there on a certain time, you better be there on time or 5 minutes before.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, you're lucky if they even see you within the hour.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
It's so different.
I go to L.A. because I have a book coming out, and so I have a few things I have to go down there for. And they'll go, well, our meeting is at, well, we're going to have lunch first. Now, wait a minute. You know, I thought we had a conference call at 2 o'clock. We won't be back till 3. Oh, that's okay. No, it's not okay. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. And you know how it is. When you have to go back and forth all the time, you're not only adjusting your body to the time zones, you're adjusting your attitude and your mentality.
Yeah. Oh, you bet. Now, do you have a website?
I do. It's CynthiaLangstonAuthor.com. You can also access it by Bicoastal Babe, www.bicoastalbabe.com.
Oh, I like that. Bicoastal, and you have some tips on there and all that, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. Star Magazine, which is a wonderful sort of a celebrity-related magazine, which a lot of people read, just gave Bicoastal Babe its pick as the hot beach read of the summer.
I love it.
I'm thrilled about that.
And the book is available at bookstores, Amazon, all that.
It is. It's actually sold out of a lot of stores right now, and I don't know what the shipping schedule is. So if people can't find it at stores, you know, they should just hop on Amazon.com and order it that way.
Dynamite. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us on Pop Off.
Thank you so much.
Take care, and don't take any guff from anybody, and just relax.
Thank you.
Take care, Cynthia.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Cynthia Langston, the name of the book, Bicoastal Babe. I love it. Bicoastalbabe.com. I'll put all of it on popoff.com. By the way, if you like any information, go to popoff.com. I've got last week's guest, the week coming up, and then I always put up all the information for you, too. And as love to hear from you, too, Mary Jane at popoff.com, if you have any ideas or want some topics on the show. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and you know what? You got to dream. Dreaming is what it's all about, folks. I'm telling you, without the dream, then why even bother? It's all about that. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk with you tomorrow on Pop Off at high noon.